Everybody's muted. The Supreme Personality. Yeah. After many, many years.
After many, many, many years.
Yeah. The Supreme Personality of Godhead.
The Supreme Personality of Godhead.
Madhusudana.
Madhusudana.
The killer of the demon Madhu.
The killer of the demon Madhu.
Having entered the Semana of Kardama.
Having entered the Semana of Kardama.
Appeared in Devahuti.
Appeared in Devahuti.
Just as fire comes from wood.
Just as fire comes from wood.
In a sacrifice.
In a sacrifice.
Okay. So, of course, this is how far back do we go? Srimad Bhagavatam is a literary incarnation of God, and it's complete for Kali Yuga. And India, of course, is the center of spirituality. And if we're looking at it from a broader perspective, our one devotee, Nishringananda, he's from Canada. His father is Dimitri Kitsikas, who's a member of the Royal Society of Canada. They're a big academic thing. And he was an emeritus professor of University of Ottawa, which is the premier French university in Canada. Now that he's retired, he's back over in Greece, and the Greek government established a separate institute just for him and his family. His father was one of the founders of the Communist Party to fight the Nazis and mayor of Athens. His sister was director of one of the biggest museums in Europe, you know. So very, very elevated person. So he was investigating all this. He got some impetus maybe from his son's activity. But his actual field was, still is, the history of international relations. And he said that, practically speaking, the same as Toynbee, that the history of international relations is basically the history of religion. You know, so much motivation in relations is religious. And he very much appreciated Prabhupada. His premier example of somebody coming to the West and offering such a great culture. And he accepted that Vaishnavas, there were different Vaishnava groups, are all the same as Orthodox, because they're Greek Orthodox. So he was pointing out that if you look at historically the literature and everything else, India has always been the center of spirituality. Ahuri Mazda and the Zoroastrian tradition, which then of course goes more to the east, to Greece and places like that. The same thing. People sometimes even suggest that he is Amitabha Buddha, and so on. With evidence, The other side, of course, is the journey to the West, Sun Wukong, in which the monk is going to India to get higher knowledge. So again and again, India is, if you want good food, you go to Italy. If you want romance, you go to France. If you want machines, you go to Germany. But if you want philosophy and spirituality, you go to India. Oh, die. Okay. We all did. And of course, and then if you look at all the literature, people will say different things, but there's, Indologists, scholars, they'll say, okay, you can make a case for the fact that Srimad Bhagavatam is the highest of all these Sanskrit literatures. And again, the first two cantos are preface, the lotus feet of Krishna, bowing down in the dust in front of him, and become a little bit more qualified, then we can go to the third and fourth cantos. Just like now we're, instead of looking at the dust, now we're looking at his feet and talking. Now we can start maybe we can get up on our knees and keep our head down there and, realize how ridiculous it is for us to be in front of a master like this. So we're in the third canto here, and it's a little bit like familiar and so on. So then it goes up, of course, to Krishna's smiling face. That's the 10th canto. And that's, of course, a very, very elevated position. We mentioned, of course, San Bernardino de Clairvaux, very famous Catholic saint. One of his students became the Pope. And he wrote a commentary on the Song of Solomon, and which he talks about it. He says, I'm only going to talk about this with you brothers, because you've already done Ecclesiastes and Psalms. And by these you become free from the lust of the body and the lust of the mind for honor and prestige. Now we can start to talk about these things. You know? So the Song of Solomon starts off with a kiss me, with a kiss of your lips. Okay? But he says before you can do that, there's two other kisses. The kiss of the feet and the kiss of the hand, which pretty much is coming across as sambandha and avideya. You know, kiss of the feet means we're so embarrassed, so ashamed, and you know, we're coming back now, and please accept us back. We did all these terrible things, and you're so kind to, like, save our lives. Okay. And when we become a little bit more confident in dealing with things, then the master says, look, this letter has to get in the post office, under the post office by 12 o'clock. Can you deliver it? And so we take his hand, and we kiss it, and we say, yes, sir, you count on us. Okay. So he's describing a very, very nice, you know, process, like that development. And we're saying the same thing, that this is very, very confidential, you know, the 10th canto. And so we have advantage of Lord Chaitanya's mercy, which allows us to appreciate things quite advanced, you know. But basically the 3rd canto is like this. We're on our knees with our head down, you know, looking at the Lord's legs and so on, and the content. And it specifically is talking all about 3rd canto. We're talking about the meeting of the Vidura and Maitreya. And as Vidura and Maitreya meet, and they discuss these basic things, you know, how does God create this prison house? How does God run the prison house? And in the end, how does the whole prison house finish up? Like that. And some maybe glimpse of, you know, of the minister of prisons, Mahavishnu, you know. Actually, what Vidura wanted to know about was beyond Mahavishnu. In the 2nd canto, we hear about Mahavishnu. And the sages and Vidura and everybody else wanted to hear about Krishna's pastimes in Mathura, Matstanam, which he explained to Uddhava. Yeah. And these are more advanced. They're not less advanced. You know? These are actually more advanced than the pastimes with Mahavishnu, who's so great, unlimited. Yeah. But Vidura was asking basic questions in the beginning for the benefit of others, and maybe because he was feeling shy. Yeah. So then it discusses the whole creation of the material. Sarga. Sarga is a creation by Mahavishnu. He gives the elements. It's like the minister of prisons, right? He sends the steel, the glass, the cement, the plans, the rules and regulations. Okay, so that's Mahavishnu, minister of prisons. Then within each universe, right, there's a Garbhadakshai Vishnu. That's like the prison warden. So we're in one universe. You know? Then the Paramatma, who is everywhere, Shuradakshai Vishnu, is like the, what do you call them, like the prison guards, their cameras and everything else. Okay, so they're always with us, you know, those kind of avatars. So he's describing this. He's describing Sarga, creation by Mahavishnu, Visarga, creation by Brahma. And then Brahma then creates different Prajapatis, including the Manus, and then they have their children. So maybe we're in the fifth level of creation now, like that. And so Devahuti and Kardama are going to become the father and mother of so many daughters who will all marry the Prajapatis and produce all the insects and horses and frogs and gophers and cats and dogs and demigods and angels and fairies. You know. So it's coming down. We described this before. Some girl, from the time she's a little girl, she wants to have parties. She plays with her dolls and her friends and imagines she's having parties and inviting friends. So if she picks out a husband, who's going to be like somebody, the mayor or a senator, and you know, he's going to have a big house and stuff. So that's all from the subtle thing. At a certain point, they see an architect, and he gives them different rough designs and you know, how the house is going to look and the trees and all that kind of stuff. Okay. Then it goes to a contractor. Okay. Then it goes to the subcontractors. And finally, you got electricians, you know, putting in the wiring. And you got cement people, foundation people. Then it's all set up. Then you got interior designers. And then finally, okay, you have the first big party. The doors are open. The bands are there. And people are being received. And it's elegant. And, you know, the vice president is visiting in our city. And we're hosting him. You know. Yeah. So we have this gross material world. I'm looking around this now. There's an old desk. And there's a beautiful altar here. And a bookcase. And it's a wall-to-wall carpeting. And, yeah. But this all happened because before people were thinking about this, right? And looking, you know. So that's what's happening. The world's going from subtle to gross, okay? And so now we're talking about Devahuti and Kardama and a lot of details about what their consciousness was and how they were creating things in the subtle level. You know? So as we become devotees in the ISKCON, of course, we have the same experience. We're becoming more subtle. We're giving up. You know, if you're smoking tobacco a pack a day, you're bound to have a kind of a dull consciousness or an absorbed consciousness like that, you know, absorbing the body. You know? But you give that up, okay, you start to become a little more light-minded, you know, and stuff. You know? Different things, they attach us to the body. So we give up these gross things. Socrates says, Confucius says, okay. You know. So we give them up and we start feeling a lighter experience and stuff. Before maybe we can't even appreciate that different people think, right? We're going around just reacting to what people say and what they do and stuff like that. We become a little more purified and we can see, well, this guy's thinking that and he means this and stuff. And we start to develop a whole, you know, psychological life with people. How are you and stuff? And we can relate to them on an empathic level and stuff. You know, but beyond that, it goes on increasing to the point where we can actually begin to feel the fairies and the Gandharvas and different, you know, animals and stuff in the sky. I mean, well, okay, yeah. So it's very good. These stories, you know, it's a very elevated story. How many ISKCON devotees are, you know, beyond the level of Kardama and Devahuti, and how many are on their level, you know, and very, you know, some passion and some lust, and it's describing before how they were really gratifying their material desires with beautiful houses and beautiful clothes and flying to the Bahamas, and they're basically, to put it in modern terms, Kardama was such a genius that he just, you know, came up with this totally something new software development and immediately manifest, you know, when it was said, hello, Bill, I got an idea for you. And Bill Gates wrote a check out for $114 million and said, oh, that's wonderful. That's going to revolutionize the computer industry. We're just coming from Micron land in Boise, Idaho, where Micron is. And they manufacture all the chips, probably the chip in this computer, many of the chips. This is Intel, the competitor, the Micron. Maybe it's three big companies in the world. So a lot of information how the Chinese are busting into the market. So what is the next big deal in artificial intelligence? Smart cars. Oh, wow. Did you know that? So we're ahead of everybody, maybe. But that's where Micron is putting their money, and everybody else is starting to do this. Of course, you have cruise control, but already they have on the highway, they have smart cars that have sensors, like, I guess, radar, that can tell what the surrounding traffic is. And they speed up and slow down the cruise control in terms of like what the traffic pattern around you is. Okay. And then they get more smart. Yeah. Then the next thing is actually to have the thing so that the cars are starting to communicate with each other.
Oh, boy.
Yeah. So the radar knows that all the cars around it are locked in with him through Bluetooth or whatever. And they're talking to each other, you know, hey, Jack. Hey, Oldsmobile. Yeah. Well, Cadillac. What kind of passengers you got? Yeah, I don't know. Yeah. Okay, and then of course there'll be no more accidents, and we'll be everybody will know where every car is and what the flow is, and the cars will be slowing down and speeding up, and it's like the next great illusion. You know, it'll be more screwed up because somebody will then hack it, right? And everything else. Like, so anyway, this is the Kardama and Devahuti. They have basically, like, you know, then he bought a 747, had it customized by Learjet Interiors, you know, and was flying to the Bahamas for the weekend, and they were chanting on their pearl japa beads and, you know, silk saris, and they went to Mangal Arati. I guess I don't know if you could do that or not. You know, you go to Mangal Arati in Paris, have lunch in ISKCON New York. And go to the Gora Arctic in ISKCON San Francisco or something. Or maybe you had to do it the other way, you know. Mangal Arctic in ISKCON New York, lunch in ISKCON San Francisco, and Gora Arctic in Hawaii. Watch the sun go down and drink nectar. Okay. So this is what they were doing. They were ISKCON devotees with a 747 and everything else. And I think he also married a few more girls at the same time, you know, like that. He went off with them, yeah. So this is possible. I don't know, maybe some devotees are experiencing this, they're chanting everything else, and they're developing these, you know, great material powers. Was a devotee. There's two of them. Anuttama. There's two Anuttamas in Washington, D.C. And one of them has a used car business. And he bought a house that has a kind of high hedges around it, kind of, you know, separates it off. And he knows one model of car, maybe a couple of them really well, the value, everything else. So he goes to these fleet auctions by businesses. And he bids on these cars, and he knows how much he'd bid, what they're worth. And so he always has like maybe about four of those cars or five in his yard there. You know, they kind of doesn't bother the neighbors. And he advertises them as a private individual. He has a mechanic he works with who knows exactly what this car, what's, you know, what needs to be done, the body work, everything else. So he can get them right back in shape, fix them up. And their fleet cars are not that old. And he's making something like about, you know, $1,000 in every unit he rotates like that and stuff. So it's $4,000, and he wants to go traveling. He doesn't. So you see how he has a celestial, you know, celestial word. He makes his money and plays the piano, answers the phone. You know, so this is happening to us. And how to relate to all this? The story gives us guidance, gives us perspective. So Devahuti is lamenting because she said, "My goodness, I had on to all these fantastic Jamashtami festivals and, you know, Gorpurnim festivals and everything else, but I really wasn't getting into the real essence of the thing. Mm-hmm. I was really a lot conscious of what saris other ladies were wearing and so on, and, you know, so on." So then in this chapter, then Kardama says, "No, don't worry. You know, you're very respectable. You know, God Himself has agreed to become your child. You know? Yeah. So don't. Yeah. You could have done better, but." You've done very good, you know, for being a lady and stuff like that, and natural attachments and so on. So, okay, different yoga for different people. So then he tells her, you know, and then Kardama, so then she does austerities. They both do austerities, and she's convinced that God's accepting the austerity. She controls her mind. She gives vratas. She gives away her money in charity, like that, you know. And then for many, many years, they're doing austerities like that. "Prabhu, I've been a devotee for 20 years and I haven't made much advancement." I hear that so much, you know. One lady, Balabhadra, actually, is he here on today or not? I don't see him. It's Balabhadra. We were with Balabhadra there, and our Sangha member. And his wife, Lalita, she's saying, "Maharaj, I've been a devotee so long and I'm not making any progress," you know. And I said, just the fact that you feel you're not making any progress means that at least you're not falling down. You feel something higher and everything else. And she was thinking about that. And our progress really in bhakti yoga is a change of heart. And it doesn't matter that the fruits are going away or this is changing, the leaves are changing, everything else. Okay, maybe it's adjusted a little bit. We chase the cobras out of the tree or something, you know. But basically, we're not concerned about those things. We're just concerned about actually that we're changing right at the root. Because you can do everything you want to with the leaves and everything else, but the roots are still there, it's going to grow back. So bhakti yoga, the real thing is how you're changing at heart. You know, do you like Krishna? You know, if you're hanging around ISKCON for 40, 50 years, that means you like Krishna. You know, you like the devotees, the thing. One of my friends in Texas has been a devotee from the Radha Damodar days. He's married, divorced. And with an ISKCON, I think married three, said if you just stay in this movement and don't commit offenses, he said you still have such incredible mercy, you're still making progress like that and so on. You know? So this is the situation that she's, you know, many, many years, you know, and then she's actually then getting the results. So don't be surprised. It took Devahuti many, many years. You know? And then what happened? A killer of the Madhusudan. We're describing Krishna as a killer of the Madhu demon. It's amazing there's no pastime of Madhusudan like in detail in the Bhagavatam. It's one of the biggest names that Krishna's mentioned is Madhusudan again and again. So you'd think like they would, you know, it would be in the Bhagavatam, there'd be like a couple chapters describing it. You know? There were two demons at the start of the universe, Madhu and Kaitava. And Kaitava means like a con game type thing. So probably you heard it one time, Prabhupada say this name Kaitava means like cheating. He says, for example, I come into some town like that, right? And then I approach somebody and I say, you know, I'm a visitor here in a you know, I don't know what's going on. You know, I'm a kind of an outside guy. But I just saw this man, you know, and he, and look at here. Don't tell anybody, but he dropped this gold, right? So it's like maybe a bag of gold coins. And if I try and get rid of it here, I'm probably, you know, an outside person, they're going to wonder about it. But I, you're like a guy who lives here. So why don't you just give me some money for this? And you can go ahead and make a good profit on this gold this man dropped. He looked like a rich guy who didn't need it. So the person is, of course, you know, thinking, aha, yeah, I can cheat and get the money. But, of course, it's not actually gold. You know, it's actually some kind of fake stuff like that and so on. This is a typical con game. Then the Prabhupada says, you know, I know something. Like, I know about these con games, you know, and so on. And he didn't know I knew these things, did you? You know, and all the devotees are laughing and so on. So Madhu, I think one story, he was like, he stole all of Brahma's knowledge, and then the Hayagriva came and killed him and stuff. It's a very, very famous name for Krishna, the killer of the Madhu demon. Yeah. And he entered the Simana of Kardama, okay, just as Devahuti appeared in Devahuti, just as fire comes out from a sacrifice. So Prabhupada's purport is very much about how this is not material. Purport. It is clearly stated here that the Lord is always the supreme personality of Godhead. Okay. Although he appeared as the son of Kardama Muni, fire is already present in wood, but by a certain process, fire is kindled. Yeah. Similarly, God is all pervading. He is everywhere. Sarvada, sarvatra, sarvada. That, of course, is the last verse in the four nutshell verses. When Brahma's getting his class, Brahma's class from Vishnu is four verses. Smart guy, you know. First one is aham evasam eva gre nanyad yat sadasat param pascha paschadaham iretachcha yovashishyeta sokhya ham. It is I, Brahma, who existed before the creation when there was nothing. And now whatever you see before me is also I, me. And when it's all finished, what will remain will be me, like that. So the Maya body is trying to eliminate Krishna from the Bhagavatam. Now, Krishna's body is material, which of course we're fighting with this in this verse too. But of course the tremendous argument against this is that Krishna is standing right in front of Brahma and he's saying, aham, aham, aham. Which even though I think in Hindi is the same word as I. So they say, well, Vishnu doesn't mean the aham, he means the principle of aham, the principle of I am, like that. Could you please give the principle of I am lunch? Could you please give the principle of I am, you know, a key to the bathroom, like that? Could you please give the principle of I am, you know, yeah, it's ridiculous, yeah, yeah. Then after that, the next argument he makes, he gives the, what do you say next? Yeah, I think he says next, whatever reality you see, okay, which is second after that, whatever reality you see in this world, which you don't see connected to me, is just like the reflection of light in shadows. Okay, so maybe you're sitting in some dark place and there's some light. You're trying to fight, you know, keep from stepping over this old garage, and there's broken like axles here and there, and all this kind of stuff. And you're trying to keep from, you know, falling over these things and cutting yourself, and there's snakes and stuff. Okay, but so there's some light being reflected, right? Yeah, that's real. You know, it's real light, but it's reflected light. So whatever we see in this world, which is attractive, I'm attracted to my family members. I'm attracted to a certain place. I remember when we first moved to Berkeley Temple, I used to walk, you know, down to the corner and walk two blocks away and walk down. It was just this incredible little neighborhood with the houses and stuff, and it was just so heart-touching, and the seasons would come and the leaves. And, you know, an ordinary person would want to buy a house there and everything else, and this is it, happiness. But I was realizing it's just reflecting what it's like to be in Vrindavan. In the village in Vrindavan, and to know all the people and the seasons is so heart-touching, you know. It's a reflection. And then sometimes what happens? It's no longer reflecting it, and it's gone. Leonard Cohen has a famous song, Suzanne, right? The most famous songs in the world. And that girl's there, the girl he wrote it about and stuff, you know. And she made this point. She said that, you know, I wasn't those things. I have some qualities I'm interested in. But yes, sometimes we carry this archetypal image is being reflected, and we become attracted. But then it goes away or something, and we realize, that where'd it go? What happened? This is reality. This is why we're suffering. You know, we're seeing. So that's the second lesson. The first one, Krishna is everything. The second one is whatever we see, which is not connected to him, it is a reflection in darkness. You know? Then the third one is, I enter into this world, and I don't enter into it, you know, just like the material elements. Of course, perfect example of this is a sweater. I start with a ball of yarn, right? And I start knitting, and I have a beautiful sweater with different kinds of plates and things in it, right? Yeah. Now, does it exist? Is that sweater real? Has a yarn ceased to exist?
Nope, just a different form.
Yeah, so I start pulling on my little thread there, and pretty soon there's no more sweater, right? Yeah. So the same way, whatever we're seeing around us right now is Krishna. But we're looking at it as a sweater. Mm-hmm. Yeah. When we start looking at it as a thread, then we see he's here. It's a very subtle concept, you know. But once you got that, then you know all it is a matter of just your perspective. Yes. And you're in the spiritual world.
It's only Krishna.
Yes.
Only
Krishna. Okay. So the last verse then is, he says, you have to research this sarvatra sarvada. In all times and in all places and all circumstances, directly and indirectly. Through the external manifestation of demigods, you have to know all these things, the fairies and all this kind of stuff. But internally, you have to search it out within yourself. And when you so you know it. Any place, any time, I know Krishna. I know how to contact him. Yeah? So that time, then you're complete. So right here is saying the same thing. Krishna's everywhere. He's omnipresent. There's fire and wood, right? See it all around here. How much fire is in this room? We're asking David Preston up. Yeah? Is there any fire in this room?
It's lightened.
Yeah, quite a bit, huh? How much fire is in that cabinet there?
Maybe two.
Yeah, but it's like a hardwood cabinet and stuff. Okay, so but that's in the intelligence. Then we see that, yeah, there's fire everywhere. There's warmth. There's a reaction to stuff. We go beyond the gross level. Okay. It is clearly stated the Lord is everywhere. The fire is present in wood. With a certain process, the fire comes out. Similarly, God is all-pervading. He is everywhere. And since he may come out from everything, he appeared in his devotee's semen. Okay? Just as an ordinary living entity takes his birth by taking shelter of a semen, of a certain living entity, the Supreme Personality of Godhead accepts the shelter of the zeman of his devotee and comes out as his son. Of course, this puts a whole different perspective on sex. It's like it becomes like... But that's what's happening. It's becoming cosmogonical in the third canto. This is not for people who are not following the four principles. Otherwise, it's just too heavy. Okay. This manifests his full independence to act in any way. It does not mean that he is an ordinary living entity forced to take birth in a certain type of womb. Yeah. Lord Nrisimha appeared from the pillar of Hiranyakasipu's palace. Yeah. Lord Varaha appeared from the nostril of Brahma. It's interesting. You know, usually we think all the things that come out of our nostrils are dirty, right? Yeah, so Lord Varaha is a pig, right? So he came out of the whole incarnation seems like a joke. You know? He came out of the nose, and then he had to go down in the Garbhodaksha ocean and root out the earth with his nose and dig her out like that and so on. And then Hiranyaksha was calling him, he said, stop, O amphibious beast, like that. You cannot take this earth from us. We have stolen her. She belongs to us. Yeah. And it said that Lord Varaha was actually insulted. He actually was hurt. His feelings were hurt because he was thinking he looked really good. If you look at these boars and pigs in Vrindavan, they have high heel shoes on. They have a pompadour hairdo. And they look really stylish. Of course, they're covered with excrement and this kind of stuff. But they have really like somebody, you know, somebody who's drinking and eating and all this stuff, going to clubs and stuff, and has this tuxedo on and stuff, and thinks, yeah, you know. That's the origin of it. So Lord Varaha actually felt insulted by this, you know. And he answered, said, yes, true it is that we are beasts of the jungle, and we are used to killing dogs like you. So he had this exchange of insults and stuff. Then they started fighting, you know. Very bellicose pastime. So he appeared from the nose. He appeared from the column. Where else you got to hear? Okay. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. And Lord Kapila appeared from the zemen of Kardama. This does not mean that the nostril of Brahma or the pillar of Hiranyakasipu's palace or the zemen of Kardama Muni is the source of the appearance of the Lord. Now, how many people in the class thought that? How many people actually here think that God is material? Probably nobody who's in this class. But why is Prabhupada talking about this? This is the third canto. Well, maybe, again, some people in the third canto have some impression. You know, we're still, you know, kind of caught up with this materialism in our service and so on. You know? And so the acharyas are still repeating this stuff again and again to really many, many years of hearing it again and again and experiencing it this way, that way, that way, this way. It becomes so profound that it actually purifies our attachment. We come into this human form of life after hundreds of millions of other lifetimes. We've been bacteria, right? In a sink, you know, enjoying prasadam, right? As being washed off the dishes, the bacteria here, they enjoy prasad with their entire bodies. They just wash themselves with it. Human body, little tongue. That's all you got. But a bacteria, oh, sex, food, okay. So why not become a bacteria for thousands of lifetime, one after another, in a devotee's kitchen, right? Okay. When you're washing your dishes, you can think of that. You know, it's an influence. Okay, then we become a human being. Yeah. So how long is it going to take to cleanse ourselves of these hundreds of millions of lifetimes of conditioning? We may understand it intellectually, but to take it down deep at heart and get rid of it so we're not attached to these things is quite profound, very profound. The Lord is always the Lord. Bhagavan Madhusudanaha. He is the killer of all kinds of demons. And of course, the demons, we're concerned about the demons in our heart, right? The demons in our particular egoistic thing. Yeah, yeah. We're all very generous, very kind. This is one of the characteristics of describe the demons. The demons love to give charity. The demons love to protect people because they want to feel how good I am and what a nice giver of charity and protector of people I am. You know, yeah, yeah. Very nice, very big gratification. Yeah, much more than grossly exploiting people, even to have people, you know, glorify you. How, oh, you're so wonderful. Yeah, yeah. And so, you know, get rid of this takes some time. He is the killer of all kinds of demons. He always remains the Lord. Yeah? Even if he appears as the son of a particular devotee. The word Kardama is significant, for it indicates that the Lord had some devotional affection or relationship in devotional service with Kardama and Devahuti. Yeah, yeah. So this is, you know, the point. What level are they on? He was yoga, was it Yoga Siddhi? And she was Yoga Lakshana? Like that. And so already at this level, we're starting to, it's pretty much impossible not to have some consciousness of God in some way. You know, to come up to this level is tremendous effort not to be God conscious if you're a yogi on this level and these subtle experiences and seeing why all these things are happening. You know? Of course, there are demons like Jarasandha, in Hiranyakasipu, Shishupal, who have been very powerful, you know, very purified in their intelligence, and know of the Vedas. You know, Ravana was so expert, but they had such effort, they were able to keep from being God conscious. You know, but at the same time too, they were God conscious, but it was keep a little bit of indirection. But so easy, pop, to flip around like that. You know, so these are very, very great. Great, great yogis and devotees at 11. So seeing here that Kardama and Devahuti, they had some affection and a relationship in devotional service. And so Krishna's reciprocating. You know? We'll see the whole conclusion of this thing is that Devahuti then gets all this instruction in Sankhya. You know, what is this world science? divide things up, statics and statics, you know, and different elements. Newton's laws of mechanics, right? We're trying to understand what is this world. You know? So who's the person who gave us enlightenment? Sir Isaac Newton, right? He invented or discovered the laws of mechanics. For every action, there is an
opposite and equal reaction.
Okay, a body with a certain inertia will continue with that inertia unless it's disturbed by something else.
Yes.
One of his fundamental laws, you know, that there is in this universe inertia.
All enclosed systems.
Yeah. Yes. So, got a physicist here. So then devotees challenge this because this is a very fundamental assumption that things will go on by themselves without maintenance. Yeah. Yeah. Very, very fundamental analysis of nature. And he was a theologian. You know, he was a theologian. He was also very, very screwed up mentally.
He's also an alchemist.
Yeah. Screwed up very much. He's called the last great alchemist. He was an unwanted child. His parents or something had died. Some aunt took him over. And he was a very sickly guy. And they were basically hoping he would die, you know. But somehow he survived and had this whole negative thing. And very, very much went into his whole life in terms of emotional relationships and stuff. But enormous theologian. About 100,000 pages he wrote on theology. And those aren't so well known. And he became a scientist because he wanted to see how God was manifesting himself and writing with his own hand in this universe. Yeah. So this is, you know, there's these really great yogis like Newton and people like that appreciating God through the external energy all times and all places. You know? So Kapila is teaching Devahuti all these things. He's teaching her the fundamental laws of mechanics. Newton also discovered the fundamental laws of optics. You know? He discovered he generated a law of gravity, which was they ingenious how they would come up with these things. You know, they would take, for example, like the time of the sun rising in Cairo, and then match it up with the time of the sun rising in what it was in London, and use the Earth like a gigantic, you know, observation platform and stuff. Yeah, yeah. So this is what Krishna explained Sankhya to Devahuti in a better fashion, very nice fashion. It allows her to understand the material world, the subtle elements, the psychology, different kinds of fundamental personality types, the princess, the king, the merchant, you know, all these things. But the conclusion is, when the whole thing is over, he says, Bamini, Mommy. He says, okay, we've gone through all this and everything else, but Mommy, just remember who I am. I'm your little boy. Oh, yes. But don't keep a little Sankhya in there so you can really enjoy me as your little boy. If you lose the Sankhya, you're going to start thinking of me as a material thing. You know, Prabhupada says, unless we hear about the negative aspects of the material world, we'll become sahajiyas and we'll start to take the material world as real, like that and stuff. You know? So you also have to hear about the negative aspects too. And that will give us the potency. If you may notice, Krishna says, I have a nice briefcase, a nice this, a nice that. But there's always something wrong with it, you know.
Yeah.
My nice briefcase has a broken zipper pull, so I always have to pull it over in a hard fashion like that. The handle doesn't go down completely, so I always have to kind of struggle putting the handle down. And I thank Krishna. Otherwise, I could become really attached. It's like the perfect roller briefcase for a sannyasi. So we say these things. That he tells her, always keep some of this analytical consciousness. You're a lady. Let your real connection to me be natural affection. You know, looking for my concern that my socks are dry and, you know, do I have a healthy meal and all this kind of stuff. But with a perspective, realizing that, you know, this is, and then you can very quickly realize the transcendental nature of variety, maternal affection, and everything else in the spiritual world like that. So Kapila left. She was crying. Where's my son gone? When will he come back? And with that impetus then, you know, in the Sankhya, then she achieved complete perfection, just like Kardama. You know? But we should not mistakenly think that even though there's a relationship of affection, that he was born just like an ordinary living entity from the semen of Kardama, Muni, in the womb of Devahuti. So very fundamental, you know, concepts in terms of devotees and so on, you know. But then we have to understand that the deity is not material, you know. Well, it's like you're imagining, you guys have all this imaginative things. We scientists are hard-headed and practical, you know. All these things are hallucinations. See, big scientists saying, oh, this is all hallucination, you know. But you can challenge them. You say, okay, you're a PhD in physics, you're a big professor, but do you actually have any kind of formal training in psychology? You're using these words with such vehemence that people who don't believe in evolution should be restricted, you know, from access to economic resources, to social prestige, and basically almost locked up. I mean, people talk like this. Mm-hmm. I went big physicist recently. He's saying by this time, if someone who doesn't believe in evolution is either an idiot or else an intense hypocrite, like that and stuff. No, it's guaranteed. If you don't believe in evolution, you're either an idiot or else a big cheater, you know, like that. So you come back and you say, well, by this time, if somebody doesn't believe in Jesus Christ, he's an idiot or a big cheater, you know. Yeah. So how? Learning how to argue these points, but always remembering the thing behind it is we're well-wishers. That's why Prabhupada was so effective in arguing that, you know, that the deity is not material, prasadam is not material, it's not imagination, because he knew his stuff materially in terms of arguments, and because fundamentally his motivation was not to become, you know, to defeat the other guy to increase his ego. Mm-hmm. So this side, people can feel that this guy's not out to get argue with me so vehemently because he's out to like establish me. He's actually really wants to have a relationship with me. Mm-hmm. You know? So over and over again, and learning these things again and again, you know, that Krishna's appearance and everything else is not material, and we're not sentimentalists. Well, maybe we are to some degree. So we have to purify our imaginative, speculative knowledge. We to the point where we're our experience of Krishna and the deity, you know, our experience of Krishna in different forms like that is actually really completely transcendental. You know? So it's kind of our little, you know, thoughts on this verse. Any questions or comments then? About, I see a lot of people comment here about Devahuti and, you know.
One thing I found interesting was that it's mentioned how Krishna appeared first within the semen of Kardama, and I can't think of any other examples. You know, generally when I'm speaking about Krishna's appearance, I find myself saying that Krishna does not appear within semen. He appears in the most amazing and wonderful ways. Like you mentioned, he appeared from the nostril of Brahma. We know that Nisringadeva appeared from the pillar, or when Krishna himself entered into the womb of Devaki, it was first from the mind of Vasudeva to the mind of Devaki, or the heart of Devaki, and then within her womb. I can't think of any other examples of mentioning coming in through semen.
I think, because you're talking about that, it mentions from the mind to the heart, but I think when we look it up, it also says from the semen of Vasudeva to Devaki. But Prabhupada's clarifying what that means. See, that's the whole thing. What this is all going on a really subtle level, you know, very, very high level. And the Sanskrit word is virya, which, of course, virya ras.
Which means very strong, very powerful.
Powerful, like that, and so on. So the strength. So Prabhupada translating this word as semen, a lot of times the word is ojas. And in that sense, it means the tactile energy within the body. So sometimes, of course, we'll have like, you know, very erotic dreams, or in this culture, you're continuously being stimulated with all these pictures. Men and women are being, whatever makes women sexually agitated is being flashed on billboards. Guys with big shoulders and big mustaches, and women being flashed with big, you know, voluptuous figures and phrases and stuff. But you can actually experience then that what happens is that the ojas, which is related to prana, which maybe you're keeping it up in more like a civilized level in your heart and your chest, and you're feeling, you know, very like heroic sentiments toward people and towards ladies and stuff. But then with these experiences, it's going down to the lower levels. One time, Lord Shiva was stimulated by Parvati, And he said this, the ojas has become dislodged from my heart. So it has to go someplace now. So even again, we may have dreams, you know, erotic dreams, and there may be no fluid, you know, loss, but we can feel rupture. And it takes a couple days for that to recover. If you've been a brahmacharya your whole life, you can really experience this. You know, in Indian brahmacharya, some nice culture, you never even have like, you know, and for example, one place is an island where I think the original cross of the crucifix or something or some Jesus is supposed to be on this island. And there's a guy, one guy stays with a cloister there and the rest of the monks actually take care of him. So you can visit the place, but no women are allowed to ever come on the island. So that way the monks that there, they never see women. Mm. Yeah, yeah. And the reaction is there. You can keep brahmacharya then without any kind of Krishna consciousness. So in that respect, I mean, it's maybe again talking about, you know, because Prabhupada talks about Krishna was transferred from the mind of the Devaki to the mind of, you know, of Vasudeva to the mind of
Devaki. You know,
yeah, like this, the moon reflects the sun when it's going down. But I think it also actually mentions that too. This is in the seminar. You know? Yeah, but there's
So in conclusion, you're saying that when Prabhupada's using the word virya, translating to semen, it may not necessarily be the fluid and those little swimming tadpoles we're thinking of with a haploid number of chromosomes.
Yeah.
23 chromosomed little tadpole. So that may not necessarily be what is being said, and that makes a lot of sense.
One Christian priest said, there never were chromosomes. There never were tadpoles, you know, back in the 19th century. And they didn't exist. They didn't exist. But because people were so obsessed with seeing things finer and finer, God created them.
Mm.
You can't deny it, you know. That's what we're saying, you know, that somebody, the general contractor passed, you know, the architect passed the his potency to the general contractor, you know. And the general contractor, then maybe has somebody go through and do up the drawing for the subcontractors, like that. And the subcontractors get out there with the guys who are putting it in. They say, this is not going to work. And he goes to go ahead and redraws on the blueprint, you know, and makes some change so the wiring can fit like that. We haven't got that kind of connector. Oh, okay, you know. So the potency is being passed, but what is virya? It says virya. Yeah, yeah. Yeah.
Haribol. Nandavats Maharaj, Nandavats Devotees.
So, Mukundas.
Mukundaji.
Haribol. So, there has been some description of why Krishna has the name of Madhusudan, though it's not written very much in our Srimad Bhagavatam. Many of the Acharyas have commented on it. And Bhagavatam Thakur, he gave in one poetry he wrote kind of the meaning of how it's applied to Krishna. So there's one song called Chora Braganya, and it says there, Vraje Prasidam Navanita Chodam Gopaganam Chadukula Chodam. So I won't read the rest of it, but just these two lines are important. Gopaganam Chadukula Chodam means that the gopis are compared to repositories of honey, like flowers. And Krishna, one in Sanskrit name of Madhusudan, also means bee. So that person who is expert at coming to steal the sweetness emanating from the hearts and minds and faces of the gopis, he's also called Madhusudan. Bhagavan Thakur is saying here that he did this because also one meaning is the destroyer of honey is also one meaning of Madhusudan. So it says, in the social sense, he destroyed the reputation of the gopis. Chadukul means two dynasties, the dynasties of their parental home, and when they get married and they go to the in-laws, Krishna, by his association with them, destroys the so-called reputation of both dynasties. So he gave very poetic, wonderful, esoteric meaning of why Krishna is called Madhusudan. Also, Jayadeva Goswami is given, but that definition I'm not speaking because different mood. But in Gita Govinda, he's also told, but not appropriate here speaking.
Yes. Yeah. Everything you're saying now is being recorded and will be used in the court of Yamaraj. As you said, the Miranda Act before we start these classes, you know, whatever you say, it can and will be. Okay, we have a question here from our comment from our local audience. Okay.
Go ahead.
Hi, Krishna. I was just looking at one of my favorite texts, the Srila Bhagavatam 7.2. And I love to study this because all the way through most of 7, it's a good description, intimate description of Hiranyakashipu's mentality. And he knew all the Vedas, he could chant. When you read his sermons, how he preached to Aditi and taught her the meaning of life, and he just was incredibly knowledgeable, and he understood every aspect of spiritual life. And he did not like for anyone to cause him any discomfort. He didn't mind causing others discomfort. And I could go on, but it's really worth reading over and over again, because in this age, that mentality is in us too. You know, we have the demon and the saint are both here. And you can get such a clear insight into one's own mind and how easy it is to be a demon with all spiritual knowledge, being able to chant mantras perfectly, preaching like crazy.
And then go ahead and see, see the deity as material and everything else in
between. Everything is material.
Wow.
I really like Srimad Bhagavatam 7.
7.2.
Starting with 2, really the whole thing, and Prabhupada's introduction to each new chapter is a sermon just in itself.
Okay.
And,
okay. Hiranyakasipu ki jai.
Well, I don't know about that.
That's an excellent point. Excellent point. We all have that. I mean, we have so much knowledge, etc. We have so much understanding, but yet still, as Maharaj mentioned at the beginning of class, we still have that demon within inside of us that we're...
How much do we actually see the deities as being people, you know, with soft skin and everything else, and how much do we still see them being brass or marble?
We've got a long way to go. We've got to keep chanting and best associating with devotees and hearing the Bhagavatam.
Wow.
We seem to, we spend a lot of time, and this is proper and advisable to spend so much time. We understand the mentality of the saint. We understand what the 10 offenses are. We're saturated with understanding what it means to be a devotee, and that's wonderful. But there's really something to be said for reading about some of these demons. What is their mindset? Because that we don't spend so much time looking for and recognizing.
Prabhupada saying, emphasizing, understand the saints, but without understanding the demons, we all become sahajins.
Oh, that's okay.
And the Isha Upanishad says that.
Prabhupada,
yes. But Madame Mohan's here.
Oh.
Yes, Madame Mohan. You know Kalindi and Dave?
Oh, Madame Mohan. You?
Yeah.
Oh, Hare Krishna.
Oh, Hare Krishna. Oh, gosh, Srila Prabhupada, please accept my humble obeisances. I owe you so much.
That's all glories of Prabhupada. Hare Krishna.
You are like one of my best teachers in my whole life.
Yeah.
Watch,
be careful. Madonna will start to demand some kind of payment.
I'll be getting a telegram soon. I owe you. No, really, I owe you my humble obeisances, and
okay.
Just so happy to know that you're here, Jai.
Amen.
Jai, Hare Krishna. Thank you. Glory to Prabhupada.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yes, Madonna Mohan is one of the great jewels of our Sangha.
Ah.
My question?
Hello.
In the previous chapter, it described how Devahuti has the 9 female children, and they popped up, or after one day, they grew. And then as Kardama was just about to leave, she asked him to fulfill that he is a promise that a male child will be born. So in this verse, it talks about
that many, many years passed before he became pregnant with Cypilidae. So is that correct? That's what happened? He was just about to leave, and then because of her request, he decided to stay for many years after that until...
I don't know. You know, Tite. Now it's Tite. Now it's that's the actual Bahu Tite Kali. You know, because usually we talk about the lunar titties and all these kind of things and so on. Because again, which perspective we're talking about? You know, is this from an earthly point of view or this kind of view or that kind of view? So the exact time thing, I don't know, because it's kind of I don't know. Maybe it's talking to God, give him a different perspective and so on. You know, so I don't know the details. But definitely, like you're saying, the girls are all growing up in one day or something, and it's, again, it's on a subtle platform. Yeah.
Yeah, after many, many years.
Yeah. But again, same time too. I travel for many, many miles to go from, you know, Boise, Idaho to Sacramento, but I did it on an airplane. And that's a whole different than traveling for many, many miles, you know, driving the whole distance. Yeah. Yeah. Time. Jeffrey Simic had one story, a book called Time is the Simplest Thing. Okay, so maybe we'll go ahead here. We're in motion now in our this whole symposium on education. You know, we may hopefully get some information about, but it'll be on Start Meeting, and it'll be starting next Thursday, actually. So I guess probably, let me see. I guess that probably we should not commit ourselves. Probably pretty much this is about it. You know, we should, because after this we'll be just floating in South America, everything else. So I want to thank everybody, and when we get a chance, we'll log on and listen. But from this point on, we're going to be, I guess, really in motion and down through South America and then back the 27th of July.
Cuando va de vuelta?
Cuando va de vuelta?
When are you going to return? When are you coming back?
Oh, cuando va a volver? Yeah. 27 julio.
Okay, not so long.
Sí, in the perspective.
So then you'll be gone for about a month.
Yeah, no, more than that. This is 6 weeks.
Okay.
Were you going to San Francisco Rath Yatra?
Boy, I after all this travel, I land on the 27th. And then they're after me. Okay, well, come on. You'll be in Houston. Just come on over to Rath Yatra. But, boy, I after that, I know I'm going to need 2 months to recover. You know, it's such stress traveling at 70 years old. Yeah. So maybe we'll make it if God carries us there. Yeah. Jagannath Swami Ki Jai. Sukhapa Ki Jai. Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna.
Buen viaje.